Live from a head cold I got from a four-year-old, it's the Punk News Podcast, episode 441. Hello and welcome to Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording from you here under a blanket in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario, where I am trying not to die. And really, I'm always trying not to die. But right now, in particular, I'm trying not to die. Also trying not to die, I assume, I hope, Mr. John Gentile. John, are you hale and hearty?
I am hale and hearty, knock on wood. However, Adam, everyone is always dying. The question is not if, the question is when.
Yes, but if a four-year-old's if I kick it because a four-year-old has coughed in my mouth, I feel that in the Klingon sense of things, that is a very there's not a lot of honor in that.
It was right for you to be purged from the gene pool. Is that what you're saying?
And it's so hard to be honorable in the Klingon thing. It's like, oh, if you don't die on battle, then you're on. Then you're not dying of honor. You mean if I won every single fight I was ever in, that's not honorable? It's like, yes, you should die on the field of battle. So I should kill myself on purpose. You know, I feel like Klingons are so like, oh, this is honor, honor, honor. It's like, you know what? Maybe you should just try to live your life and forget about these weird beliefs you have. Like Gowron, who kicked the shit out of Worf multiple times. He's the best. I'm team Gowron all the way.
There was an episode of Deep Space Nine that I was watching the other day where basically this Klingon is drunk and he wants more booze or whatever, or he doesn't want to pay his tab, and Quark tells him no. And then he gets up to like drunkenly fight Quark and just falls over and falls on his dagger and dies. And then that becomes like the whole plot point of the episode, is all these family members of the Klingon are showing up being like, did he die with honor or did he die like a putz? And Quark's got to be like, I beat him in combat. And that lie just spirals out of control. And that this is what the show is about now, is Star Trek. Also, Mr. Tom Trauma in.
You notice I'm sitting here silent because I just don't live in your nerd world, guys. I can't possibly hold my life to Klingon standards.
We can talk about Doctor Who.
I'm more of a Tribble man. Isn't that those like little carpet rug round things?
I've decided that rewatching Star Trek from the 90s is the only reprieve that I have from the shit world that we live in. Like everything is constantly worse. There's nothing I can do about it. And the only thing that I can do is stop looking at the internet where people are having conversations that aren't solving the problems, and instead, check out what's going on with Miles O'Brien.
Adam, you need to get into some old school Doctor Who, specifically the Tom Baker years, 1974 to 1981.
Yes, those are classics. I watched all those when I was a kid.
Specifically, The Face of Evil on DVD, which I just got used for $11.60.
Nice.
This is the Punk News Podcast, where we talk about things that happened in the past week of punk rock, nominally. So I'm not quite sure if that is happening right now. But the one thing that happened that involves, I guess, punk rock and not punk rock is Record Store Day. So is it biannual? You know, say biannual? Does that make sense?
I think biannual can mean one of three things. It's either twice per year, every other year, or a year that has sex with any gender.
English is a horrible language.
But when you say bi, you're only assuming two genders, John.
That's right.
You're already mistaken.
I'm already sexist. I can't.
Exactly. You're going to be banned from Facebook for 1 month.
Okay. Anyways, the event that happens twice a year, once on Black Friday and once nowish, has passed. So it's been Record Store Day, a whole bunch of weird exclusive releases that were put out to make you go get in line and go to your record store and to hopefully patronize some independent shops in your area. That's happened. It's come and gone. John, you of course participated. As I understand it, this year you you participated to the point of excess, to the point of where you had the vomit in like the Romans, where you've just, you know, partied too much.
I need to be taken out behind the barn and put down. I really do. I'm out of control. Adam, should I talk about my record store day, or is that just a wind up?
Well, you know what? Let me talk about mine, because it's super abbreviated and it's going to make you sound like a hedonist. That's what I want to do. Whatever really paints you in the wrong way. I mean, we also talk about Tom's, which didn't happen, right? Tom, you punked out this year.
Well, punked out.
I don't like to think of it as punking out. See, right now, so, you know, Michigan roads are notoriously bad because the winter weather beats on the road. So they've started construction season, even though it actually snowed here last Saturday and Sunday. But so I had to work in the morning, and I'm like, well, I'll run over there in a little bit. I waited till about 11. Nobody opens super early around here for record store day. I saw the like Facebook pictures of people lined up around the block. So I'm like, I'll work till about 11. Then I'll run over there. So I go to jump on the highway, and they're doing all the construction on nights and weekends, which is nice for the normal commute. But I literally get on the highway and I stop. I go to change highways. I stop. By the time I got on the second stopped highway, I literally was so irritated, I said, screw it, jumped off, took back roads home. That was my record store day experience. Yay me. Though I did pick up a couple of nice things.
That feels very, very old man of you.
Well, yes, I was angry at roads, so I didn't go to record store day. I'm gonna make a trip this week to make up for it. I have money burning a hole in my pocket.
It's like I had a roommate once that didn't go to class because it was raining, and I got up.
I'm not made of sugar, Adam. I will go out in the rain. I just can't sit in my car for hours on end, not moving, without going insane.
No, that's justified, I guess. So I did. I wasn't really planning on doing it, because nothing on the list in particular this year struck me as super necessary for my life. Now, The big asterisk here is that the Canadian list and the U.S. list are always different. And there's like slightly different things and slightly different emphasis on both of them. But there was something I decided that I wanted that was a free thing that got me out. So there was a split that was put out between two. This is the most punk thing I'm ever going to say. Two kind of like Canadian singer-songwriters. The one is called The Weather Station, which is a singer named Tamara Linderman. And the other one is Jennifer Castle, who is, in my mind, like the most magical person ever. So they
you can't imagine how disappointed I am, Adam, when you said two Canadian singer-songwriters and they weren't Neil Young and Gordon Lightfoot. But sorry, continue.
These are the modern descendants of those people, the spiritual successors of Neil and Gord. Anyway, so Jennifer Castle is amazing. She was on the last Fucked Up record. She sings on the Came Down Wrong track that has the dude from Dinosaur Jr. on it near the end of the track listing. Anyways, so there's this Jennifer Castle Weather Station split that was out, that was distributed to a handful of stores in Canada as like a free door crasher thing. Like if you buy anything, you can get one of these 7 inches. And I'm like, I like both these artists. That feels like the kind of thing that I want to own. So that that was what got me out. So I went out to Mind Bomb Records in St. Catharines, which is a cool little store that is really one of the only two local record stores that is in my that's within, say, a half hour driving distance of me at this point. I went out there, poked around. I had to buy something so that I could get my free 7-inch. So there was a reissue this year of a band, actually a band that we mentioned, or that I mentioned under my breath on the last episode of this show. Was, are you aware of a band from the late 90s, early 2000s called Thrush Hermit?
No.
So when we recorded our Descendants podcast, they actually had a song on, there was an All Descendants tribute album that came out.
Was it the homage one?
Yeah, the homage one. And they covered, I forget what the fuck on there, but they were on that record. Anyways, Thrush Hermit was a band from from Nova Scotia that was around in like the really, really early 2000s. they are notable at this point, sort of being of the band that that gave a guy named Joel Plaskett his start. And Joel Plaskett is sort of like a huge indie rock presence in the Canadian music world these days. Like Joel's great, but he that was his band when he was young and had long hair. And they had a record called Clayton Park that came out on CD only in like 2000 or something like that, and it completely flopped, and no one cared about it at all. But it became a little bit of a legendary album as far as people that follow can rock circles go. So that got reissued as like a big double LP gatefold, like 45 RPM, three songs per side kind of set. So I bought that because, you know, you got to buy something. And I bought the new Pup record because, hey, I was there, but there's nothing Record Store Day special about it. Just so I could get my free split. And that is what I did. And then I took the rest of the money in my pocket and I went to the farmer's market and I bought apples because it was right down the street from there. Now, while I was there, they also went and they said, do you want this free Rolling Stones record? And I was like, well, I want free anything, sure. So they gave me this Rolling Stones record called Early Tracks that is... it is a bunch of recordings from 1964.
How many apples do you have to buy to get a free record, Ed?
Well, no. This is the Record Store, not the apples. I didn't get free shit for the apples. But anyways, though, printed on the cover of this is like a list of Canadian record stores to which this record was available on Record Store Day. So it was some promo animal. But I'm going to leave the shrink wrap on it, and I'm going to mail it to John Gentile, because this seems like a thing that John Gentile would want.
It is, and thank you, Adam. I certainly do appreciate that, and I was somewhat taken aback that Adam would think of me in his spare time. So, Adam, I appreciate that.
Yes, I just want to point out that I have a head cold, and I am touching this record.
So, listen, if I get sick, Adam, all that means is that you're inside me. So that's all that means.
I mean, that's all fine and good, Adam, but are you going to send me a couple of apples?
I mean,
it's shipping. The international shipping would probably kill it. I'd probably be better off.
Isn't that against the rules? That's like the biggest crime. It's like you can cross the border with like a fucking rifle at this point, and no one cares. But if you try to cross with a banana. Like,
we don't want your filthy apples in.
They do not want that happening.
When I came back from Netherlands with seeds for my mom, the guy was so bad that he shattered my window magnet. My kitchen, my not window magnet, what do you call it? A refrigerator magnet. He's like, what's this? I'm like, it's seeds. And then he just starts like shaking my bag and like my magnet flies out and breaks. And he didn't even care. He's like, you can't bring these into the country.
Was it tulip seeds, John?
No, it was sunflower seeds that I bought in the airport that were specifically sold in the airport so you could bring them into the other country. But in Newark, he didn't care. He wanted to break my refrigerator magnet.
Somebody's still mad that they failed out of the police academy, huh?
Exactly.
I crossed the border the other day to pick something up from our U.S. shipping place, and there was a banana sitting on the passenger side seat of my car because as I left my house, I thought, I'm kind of hungry. Maybe I will want this banana. And as I was pulling up to the border guy, I was like, oh, fuck. And like took it and like shoved it under the dash so that no one's going to see the
don't
banana.
Don't tell us where you put it to hide it at. And we all know where people hide things to get across the border. So you don't have to be embarrassed.
Yes, I was very concerned.
Because if you have anything to declare, and Adam's like sweating, you know, he's breathing heavy. He's like, no. You've got a banana in there, don't you? Spice up.
my wife has become a person that appreciates this weird internet subculture of people that make their own bath products and things like that, like bubble stuff and like bath bombs and all this crap, right? But basically just like a bunch of like multicolored baking soda that people make and sell on Etsy. So she comes home and she goes, oh, I bought a bunch of stuff from this person on Instagram that you got to go pick up at the shipping place in the States. And here I printed out the receipt for you in case they want it at the border. And the receipt is like bombs, $38. And I'm like, great. Thanks. This is really going to help me.
Good deal. Declare. Good deal for bombs. Actually, barely buy the materials for that.
Anyways, yeah, that's my life now. Picking up bath products over the States with a banana. John, what did you do?
Well, see, man, the thing with Record Store Day is we were like, oh, it's kind of boring this year. And I'm like, you know, I'm not going to get that much. And I knew my dad might need help at the produce market. So I went to Record Store Day at like 6 a.m. And I got to say, man, I've done, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 Record Store Days. Every single time I have a nice conversation with the people next, well, with a person next to me in line. There's always like your basement dwellers, but sometimes it's just like, it's usually like dads just like looking to have a good time and get that Eric Clapton repress. You know what I mean? So I always have a good time. I went to Electric Avenue in Westchester, and they always have a great selection of the Record Store Day stuff. I got some cool things. I got the Alice Cooper repress of Dirty Diamonds because I'm breaking my rule. I used to only get records basically up through until the CD era, and then I don't need the record after that from a pragmatic standpoint because records press in the – I mean record – yeah, albums press in the 90s are usually like really expensive, and I don't need like – I don't need the vinyl pressing of the new Rolling Stones live album. It's stupid. You know what I mean? But I saw that nice press, and now I'm starting to get like all the Alice Cooper records, even the ones – that are just stupidly expensive. I mean, I'm not paying stupidly expensive prices, but I'm looking for the ones that are generally stupidly expensive just because they were like made in limited quantities in like 2003. The kicker being that album is not a great album. I also got I got the Ramones live album on New Year's Eve, and that is a fantastic recording. I got to say, it's the Ramones during the fourth album era. And I think it's the first official live album with Marky, like Timeline. It's the Timeline. It's the first official album with Marky on drums. And it's got them doing a bunch of songs that they didn't really do after that era. After that era, they kind of cemented back to like their classic songs plus a few new ones. Whereas that one's got some like unusual stuff, like Bad Brain on it. It's got some of the other like stuff from like the fourth album and the third album.
Does it have like the ballady ones or anything?
It does, and actually they sound great. And
they probably sped up a little bit.
One part of me is like, how did they sit on this like fantastic recording for so long? But on the other hand, is we're getting new live Ramones album every year that are excellent.
I know, quality. I noticed that every year a new Ramones live album.
I'm all for it, man. I mean, honestly, it's like,
man,
it's,
but at what point is the market saturated with quality live Ramones material? I mean, the reissue of Leave Home a few years ago had like a full good concert on the end of it.
Well, they're re-releasing those live albums as records, so that's like the case. So you don't have to buy the deluxe. You know what I mean? Yeah. I also got Elton.
I love John. Buying the same album three or four times. That's my favorite thing. I've discussed that in the past.
I also got Elton John live in 1979, and it's what I've wanted for a while. It's finally a Elton John album. Live album from his prime period, if you will, although that technically is just a couple of years after his prime period. It sounds great. It's him just doing all his rockers, almost no ballads. But the funny thing is Elton John set list hasn't changed like 1979. Like he's been doing the same set list for almost 40 years. Like how is that not boring you to death? But the album is real cool. Then I went and helped my dad out at the produce market. Then I went and helped my Uncle Jack. Then I went to Sit and Spin Records, probably my favorite store in Philadelphia, definitely my favorite store in Philadelphia. They don't do the Record Store Day thing. They do the, you know, rare records released that day, which is great. I got the first vinyl pressing of Integrity's first album. I got some super rare Spitz records where it spits 3 and 4, but the cover is completely different than the other releases, which was cool. And after that, I got a really cool David Bowie bootleg. It's David Bowie and Nine Inch Nails singing together in 1994. And what's interesting is the bootleg companies are getting much more brazen. Like 5 or 6 years ago, I don't think you would have seen bootleg David Bowie records in the store. Like maybe you see like bootleg, you know, like, I don't know, Creedence Clearwater Revival or bootleg Stooges just because they weren't that litigious. But Bowie, I mean, that's heavy duty, but I'm seeing Bowie bootlegs and Van Halen bootlegs in mainstream stores. And the bootleg is getting pretty ballsy. That being said, the bootlegs are actually really well done. What is interesting, I guess, about modern bootlegs is with the older bootlegs, if the cover was crappy, it probably sounded crappy. If the cover looked really nice, it's probably a good recording. Now the bootleggers have gotten smart and they're making bootlegs where the packaging is beautiful, the layout is beautiful. You know, the pictures are really nice pictures, but you play the record, it sounds like garbage. So it's kind of a more dangerous bootleg game now, and they're kind of expensive. So those were my big adventures for Record Store Day. Nothing crazy happened. Just I got the fever. I meant to hold back, but man, I got the fever. And I got too many records, man.
I'm convinced that my ideal situation would be to do some regional shopping. Like I want to go out to, you know, I want to go out to Montreal and go to a cool Montreal record store and just buy stuff from the local Montreal bands. And then I want to go to, you know, I want to go over to Toronto and do that. I want to go over to Ottawa and do that. Like, I want to hit these big cities where I want, where, you know, I like the little bands that are from there, but I can't find their stuff. Because every time the record store day list is released, I always come into it with some anticipation that it's going to be a bunch of music from the bands that I'm currently engaged in. And those aren't bands that are going to afford to make shit for record store day. So I don't know why I do that every time, but,
you know, yeah. It's funny, that regional thought. I have that all the time too, Adam, or I have the thought of like a band I like is coming to play. And I'm like, man, I hope they have like literally every record they ever put out with them when they come to my town to put on their little folding table, you know?
Well, you see, but, so I gambled with that and won the other day. So,
see, I've lost the last few times. So
I own probably the entire catalog, save one or two records from a 10-year-old label called You've Changed. And You've Changed is it's run by Steve Lamke, who is one of the guitar players in the Constantines, and Daniel Romano, who is Daniel Romano from Attack and Black. So the two of them, it puts out like all of their solo stuff, but it puts out like all these like weird Canadian-ish groups that are part of their kind of like wider peer group. And the other night, the Steve had a record come out, and one of the Attack and Black guys named Ian Daniel Kehoe had a record come out, and they both went and they played this artist center that's in St. Catharines to like, it was a really cool show because they played to like, you know, 25 people, but it was anticipated that was good, how the show was going to be. So you paid your cover at the door and you came in and there was just like, you know, a handful of couches and some chairs and that was all just around where they were going to play. So it was a nice, cool vibe. But I walked in but I knew that they both had records coming out. So I'm like, I don't want to mail order these beforehand, even though I would have otherwise, because then I'm paying, you know, 10, 15, 20 extra bucks in shipping because shipping sucks up here. And I get there and they've both got
being punk bands, they'll have them for like 15 or 20 bucks. At right. The show, yeah. Right?
So the records are there. They're like 15 and 20 bucks, but there's also the cool stuff that was there with them. So like these are all like folky artist dudes, right? So they do weird stuff sometimes. So, so Steve Lamke just had a record came out called Dark Blue. That is really cool. It's on the record. It's him. It's Danny from Attack and Black accompanying him, and Dave Nardi, who used to be the bass player for the Dirty Nil on their early records. So it's the three of them sort of playing out these songs. So Steve went and took all the lyrics for the record, and he made this what is the printing term for this? It is a chapbook. I was not aware of what a chapbook was, but it's like, it's some
is it basically a zine?
It's kind of like a zine. It's sort of like an old, it's like a zine by way of like medieval Europe. It's where I think they print it all on like a single piece of paper, and then it gets all kind of like folded and then bound or something like that. I don't know. Anyways, so he went and he made these chapbooks printed of the lyrics for the record. And it's right here. It's a beautiful little book, and it's like, it's bound in string. It's like a piece of art. And I think, what does it say on here? How many of these did they make? 40 of them or something like that. Like it's like a super limited, weird little thing that only a fan would want, of which I am. So, you know, I was just super stoked to go get one of these, you know, from them in person. And that was my plan, Tom, was just to show up, you know, hopefully not order all this stuff beforehand, and just, you know, buy the stuff from the bands live. That's what I want to do.
Honestly, that the best thing to do is to get the record from the band at the show if you can. It's cheaper. The band gets the money. But also ordering from the label directly is cool too. You know what I mean? Or honestly, or buying at the record shop. It's all cool because I like labels, I like bands, I like record shops. Just don't buy it off Amazon. You know what I'm saying? I will say, and I meant to add this, is I paid a crap load of taxes just before Record Store Day. So kind of the reason why I got the fever is I was in a bad mindset. I'm like, fine, Uncle Sam, I'm going to spend my money before you can take it. You know what I mean? So I was a little loose.
I'm already getting screwed. I might as well screw myself.
Tom, have you ever had that mentality? Like, I'm so mad that I'm spending this much in taxes. I'm going to spend some money on myself then.
I've had to pay taxes two of the last 3 years, so I feel your pain, my friend.
I've had to pay taxes 18 of the last 18 years, Tom.
Well, but the thing is, I've had, I have four children.
Yeah, yeah.
Three of them are still at home. Yeah, dude. Trust me, the tax break does not pay for those children. Getting that $7,000 back that we used to get or whatever was awesome. But yeah, now my wife owns her own business, and I'll tell you what, GE might not pay taxes and General Motors might not pay taxes,
and
small business owners get hosed, man. So we get beat up really bad on our taxes, despite the fact that we still have three kids at home. Now we got a couple kids that are going to be in, my older daughter's going to go to college, and we'll see, hopefully next year we'll be all right. But anyway, but yeah, no, I agree. Buy records wherever you can get them, as long as it's, I was at Best Buy today because I was looking for some headphones, and they don't have any CDs there anymore. You know?
Yeah, I did know that.
And
yeah.
they have a box of records, and like, it's definitely not curated towards me. I mean, there's a lot of hip hop in there or something, but so they got I've been buying the Metallica remasters on vinyl. So they have one that I don't have, and the price is fair. It's the same as I'm going to pay at the indie shop, but I'm just like, you know what? Screw these guys. I'm not giving them my money. You know, you can go to Walmart, dude. They got a box of records. I think that one's more curated to my needs, which makes me wonder.
Fun fact, the only mainstream store where you can get blank cassette tapes, Walmart.
Is that true?
It's true.
Well, the only person who would know that is someone running a cassette label. But yeah, but I literally am like, you know what? I'd rather go see the real record store, even if it's a buck more or whatever. You know, it's just, who cares, right?
Definitely. Record stores rule, man. Do you guys love record stores? I love record stores.
I do. My problem is I don't have anybody else that loves them as much as I do. So honestly, I almost have to go by myself.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And there's one in town here in Grand Rapids, believe it or not. And he does. It's funny because the one downtown that I absolutely love and I know the owner of and have known him for 100 years, he's got great punk section, great metal section, all separated, all really well curated. And in there, in like 10 minutes, I could be out of money, because you just go right to what you want. But there's another store in town that I swear to God that he must have 100,000 records in there. You could literally spend all day digging through records, cheap records, all, but because it's not separated like by genre like the other store is. So, but yeah, so I don't, my daughter is a record shopper, so she'll come with me for a while, but she's only good for like an hour or two. So I pretty much just have to go by myself until I stink of old records. Get that old record smell. It's not good.
It is a unique stink. John, did you want to play a song speaking of unique stink,
yeah. John?
I'm going to play a song, and we're going to talk about this band when we come back. But this band, this track is Slash Your Face by The Dogs from Detroit. Slash Your Face.
We'll be right back.
Okay, John, why are we playing the Dogs from Detroit?
We're playing the Dogs from Detroit, Adam, because out of the blue, Punk News is throwing yet another show, and this one's real soon, May 4 in Philadelphia. The Dogs, proto-punk legends, influence to Black Flag, influence to the Minutemen, influence to Van Halen, are playing Creep Records in Philadelphia. Small show, which is where we usually small number of tickets, that is. It's where we do a lot of the punk news shows. Then Philomoka is where we do our two main shows. And it's going to be friggin' awesome, man. The Dogs are a band that formed in 1968, just a little bit after the Stooges. Same kind of era as the Stooges, Alice Cooper, MC5, same kind of that. What's interesting about the Dog, I mean, first of all, the Dogs friggin' rule, but their lyrics, which are from before punk, are like very punk. Slee City, Class of 1970, and the classic Slasher Face, which is like extremely punk, but I think that's was recorded in 1972, which is definitely before punk, but it sounds punk. You know, anyway, it's going to be freaking awesome. It's the three original members, and this is not a thing where it's like the bass player. It's like the three original Dogs, two guys and a gal, so that's kind of cool too. I mean, especially in the late 60s or early 70s, it was unusual to have women in aggressive bands, but here we are. It's one of only two East Coast shows they're doing. It might be their first Philadelphia show ever, and the opening bands are going to be friggin' awesome as well. One of the opening bands is Atlantic Thrills, which is a band from NYC, kind of a garage rock, punk and roll kind of thing. Another band, Quam, one of my newer – I love this band. We're going to talk about them in a couple of minutes, but I love Quam. Quam is just an – called art pop punk. They're just a fantastic band that's kind of like kind of got kind of a No Doubt vibe, but they kind of got like an Avengers kind of a crazy Danger House style vibe too. And also playing is Code of the Jaguar, the debut performance by Joel Tannenbaum of Plow United, his brand new band. It's him and two other guys, and this is his first live show in 3 years, and it's the debut of this band, and it's going to be an awesome evening all around. And I'm psyched to have this legendary band, which huge influence on Black Flag, a huge influence on, you know, Minutemen, Descendants. All those guys are a huge fan of the Dogs because they hung out in LA for a while too. And this is going to be awesome, baby.
Say, so, you know, I'm a huge fan of all things Detroit punk.
Did you know about this band, Tom?
Stooges, you know, I have a vague familiarity with them. I don't believe I've ever actually heard them though. I'm curious about it. I wonder, I don't know, where are they located? Are they still out of the Detroit area? Or they live in LA, or where do they live now? Do you have any idea?
They're in the general Detroit area. I don't think all, I mean, you know, the Dogs is not like their main thing, you know, that they're married and have kids and all that kind of
stuff. You mean they didn't take 40 years off and still aren't making a living off it? Yeah, no, I get that. But I didn't know if they were still, but I wonder if they played on that side. I wonder if they played over there. But anyway, no, I think this is really cool, John. This is more up my alley than I think some of your whimsical shows.
Yeah, John, how did this one come together exactly? Because this is way outside of your normal, you know. I would not have expected you to go put together a protopunk show.
Oh, see, I'm surprised by that.
The one protopunk band. It's still got his sort of normal, like, wacky supporting cast.
I think Adam and Tom see me as the wacky guy that loves wacky. Like, I think they see me as Weird Al Yankovic or something. Anyways, no, this is cool. I'll just be frank. I was trying to set up a show for May 4. I wanted it to be the Punk News Prom, and I was going to throw like a prom and have prom music between bands, and I would come out as the principal and yell people, and it was going to be Quam and a couple of other bands. But I just could not get a band, like, I just could not get it together. Like, even though there's really no other punk shows that day, like all the other bands is like, oh, we can't do it, blah, blah, blah. But then, fair enough, I was down at Sit and Spin Records, and I said, oh, man, I'm trying to get the show together, but I'm having a little bit of problems. And the guy that – well, two people run it, Leora and Colin. And Colin said, oh, yeah, you know, the Dogs are trying to get a show down here on May 4, but they're having problems getting a show together. And I'm like, it's kismet. So I called up their guy. I'm like, bro, let's make it happen. I didn't say it like that. But I said, bro, let's make it happen. And it just fell into place, like random cosmic chance.
And their manager put the guy on hold who he was talking to about fixing his muffler and booked the show with you.
That's right. That's right.
But that's so cool.
I mean, that's one of the that, you know, I never used to be a guy that was like, you know, support your local scene. My opinion used to kind of be like, you know what, like, forget about supporting your local scene. If the band can't rise above, that means you're really not that good. So supporting your local scene is a fallacy. But on the other hand, the older I get, the more I see it is kind of cool to support your local scene, just because, like, you know, teamwork and interconnectivity is making this awesome show happen that wouldn't have happened if there wasn't sort of a network of local people, you know.
John, that is a very healthy attitude to adopt. So, speaking of Qualm, there's a Qualm video that
Fred John came out. Getting in there, getting down the scene, getting dirty.
The video is for the song Everybody Wants to Watch. It's from their upcoming self-titled debut LP. You can find the link for it over on Punk News. John, what do you want to tell people about this?
I love this song. I mean, I didn't really know a whole lot about Qualm until I kind of came across their debut EP. They opened one of the World Inferno shows and just won over the crowd because they're freaking awesome. They're awesome, but they're also really likable. You know, some bands are cool because they're like scary and mean, and some bands are cool. You're like, oh, these guys are funny. I like these guys. That's Qualm is very likable. I love this track, but even more so, I think this video is hilarious. But here's my question for you two. Is this video hilarious because I like the band, or is this video hilarious because it's hilarious?
A little bit of both. I mean, like it has this this charmingly mid-fi quality that I get from a lot of punk band videos at this point, where you know that the band, they knew enough people that knew something about film that they could go and they could assemble something that's a little bit more whimsical and weird than your standard black and white Rancid Vision performance video, but there's clearly not a lot of money involved. And this hits that sort of sweet spot. And that's sort of my preference these days where you'll see a video from a band where, like, yeah, it's not, they haven't completely phoned it in, but it's clear that they didn't have, you know, Universal giving them $40,000 to make the thing either. I like that.
I'm going to agree with Adam, but I can't allow any follow-up questions.
Yes.
Well, yes. Then you should all go. You should all come to the Proto Punk Party on May 4th to see the Dogs, Qualm, Atlantic Thrills, and Joel Tannenbaum's new band. And Qualm is awesome, and they're one of my new favorite bands. So you all are going to hear about Qualm nonstop for the next 18 months until they break up suddenly, and I'm pissed off because they broke up after releasing one album, and they had such promise. They had such promise. Why do all my favorite bands break up after one album?
It's kind of for the best, John. That's the way it's supposed to be, man. Burn bright, burn fast.
Bad Canoes, Posers, Elna and the Degenerates. All my favorite bands break up after one album.
But did you not find, though?
This is called the John Gentile Curse, actually, in case you haven't noticed on the internet.
Was that Adam?
No, there's a sweet spot to this, which is that if you don't get too emotionally invested in the brand of that particular band, then you realize that, like, oh, most of this band is just going to reform as another band, and they're going to do stuff too. So, like, I got that feeling this past week there's a band that is one of my favorite bands right now is Tough Age. So they're three piece playing out of Toronto, and they have a. They basically, like, shuffled around their members and pulled in a couple other players, and they formed this way noisier version of the band called Rotten Column, where they basically just, like the bass player sings for it, and the normal singer guitar player is playing bass, and they brought in someone else to play guitar. It's the same drummer, but, like, it's more or less the same band, right? Well, all of a sudden, it was like, these are the last Rotten Column shows out of the blue. And I was like, no! I'm like, they were so fun, why? And it was like, oh, it's because one of them is, you know, one of the people that they pulled in was moving to Vancouver or something, so they can't keep playing shows. So they were going to make a lot of noise about it being the last Rotten Column show. But, you know, all those people are still friends and still playing music together, and they're probably just going to shuffle things around and give it a new band name and do something different in a month. So I'm cool with that.
See, my bands, when they break up, like, on, like, Tuesday, they're, like, pictures in the band. They're like, we all love each other. We're all best friends. I'm so happy to be in this band. And then Thursday, it's like, we broke up. We all hate each other. You know? Other bands that broke up after amazing first albums, Canadian bands, Adam, VCR, and Prom Night, who I think you saw live, didn't you?
I didn't go to the last Prom Night show. But I mean, like, talk about connections here. That last Prom Night show, and Prom Night was awesome. But that last Prom Night show was at a comic book store in Toronto where two of the three people from Tough Age who I just mentioned work, and one of the Tough Age people booked that show. So there you go. There's your connection.
Well, tell them to get VCR back together and tell them to come to Philadelphia.
VCR, I saw the news recently. John will book them. Who did VCR? What did they reconstitute as? Hold on, I gotta answer this question.
VCR did was basically prom night with a different singer, I think.
Was that it then? Maybe that was it. Yeah, okay, that was it. I was thinking of some other four letter acronym Toronto band. In any case, I don't know where I was going with any of that. So let's just keep going. All right, so a couple more stories before we play another song for you here. So Avail, we've been talking over the past couple of weeks here about the Avail reunion, where they are celebrating their Over the James record, which is 20 oddish years old at this point. This was their big lookout era release. So first they announced a reunion show, it sold out. Then they announced a second, it showed out. It sold out. Both of those were ones that were based in Richmond, which is the band's sort of hometown. Well, the band has now added three more summer shows. September 6th, they're going to Philly. September 7th, NYC. September 8th, Boston. Angel Dust is going to open all three of those shows. And to fight scalpers, each show will reserve 200 tickets to be sold at the box office only, with the rest sold online. So we're not, I think, as the Punk News Podcast, really intending to cover every single Avail show that gets announced. But that fact is the interesting one, I think. So, John, has Avail figured out a way around the scalpers?
Adam's throwing my own question back at me. It's interesting that this is a problem we're having, because this is a problem that was directly and intentionally created by Ticketmaster itself. The idea with Ticketmaster to begin with was to get easy access and fair access to tickets. And for a while, as we discussed before, scalping was illegal. And I'll just be frank, there was African-American, for the most part, there's African-American guys out front, and the cops were harassing them nonstop. And then Ticketmaster said, oh, actually, we can make money off scalping, so we'll do scalping and it'll be legal. And then all of a sudden, scalping was legal. And as Adam added before, there certainly was a racial element to that. Is, you know, when African-American people were doing it, oh, it wasn't cool. But when some rich CEO thinks it's fair to do, oh, well, now it's legal and that's fine. Same with marijuana. You know, and I don't even smoke weed, but I think it's total BS. Anyway, the point being is the whole reason Avail and Bikini Kill and all these guys are having to go through all these hoops to get tickets to actual fans without paying a 900% markup is because of the system that Ticketmaster created to make it harder for actual fans to get tickets, and to make it easier for people, for themselves, but also people trying to artificially increase the price of tickets just to make money, which Ticketmaster makes money off that too. What I'm saying is, it's hilarious that the very system created to give people tickets is the hurdle to people actually getting tickets, and a whole secondary, completely essential market that doesn't do anything except for raise the price. And I commend Avail for trying to figure out how to get around that. And I commend Avail for, to a degree, taking Ticketmaster head on and saying, well, our shows have to have this. I think more bands should do that, in that, you know, it's not easy with Ticketmaster. Is a behemoth, and Ticketmaster is, or Live Nation is the same thing, is unquestionably a monopoly. And so it's not easy to say, well, we're not going to play that game. So I do commend Avail for at least trying to figure out some way to beat to subvert Ticketmaster's gruesome design, if you will. I don't think this is a perfect solution, but I think it's better than almost any other band of this level with these surprise announcements has done. That being said, as we've seen with Misfits, and as now we are seeing with Bikini Kill, don't spend crazy amount of money on these tickets, because especially with Misfits and especially with Bikini Kill, scalpers buy these at insane prices. They sell whatever tickets they can at insane prices, and they're stuck with a whole bunch, but they don't even care because they've already made their money 10 times over. So ticket prices will crash, and you might even get them for below face value.
I agree, John. Weed is cool, man.
Ticketmaster bad, weed good.
Yeah, well, let's leave it at that. John, that was a very nice little description there. So I'm just going to... I'll let that one ride. All right, here we go. This is a story of which I have no professional input, so it is all going to be on you once again. So I will read, and you will you will
respond.
You will put the hammer down, John. All right. So Tom G. Fisher, who founded Hellhammer, Celtic Frost, and Trypticon, he's going to be playing Hellhammer songs once again. The new project is called Triumph of Death, and and is described as a Hellhammer tribute band, just like I'll be a tribute band that happens to include the founding member of Hellhammer, which actually I kind of respect. We'll talk about that in a minute. So the lineup is guitarist, vocalist, Tom Gabriel Fisher. It features guitarist, vocalist, Andre Matthew, drummer, Alessandro Camiro, bassist, Mia Wallace. Is Mia Wallace the name of the character from Pulp Fiction?
Yes. However, this person is Swedish and was born before that movie came out. But that is Mia Wallace. Swiss.
Retroactively, it's the Pulp Fiction person. Anyways, so you can see the upcoming dates over on Punk News. So Fisher had previously issued a press release. Here's what he said. He said, "Hellhammer will never return and will never be reformed. It is absolutely impossible to reform a band so closely linked to a very specific and unique period in time. I never considered it, no matter how substantial the offers that were pitched to me over the years. But Hellhammer's music exists, and it is an extremely important part of my life's path, and I would like to play it on stage before my demise," which is wonderful. So anyways.
Imminent.
Yes. No, not that his demise is wonderful, but just that is a very metal thing to say.
I didn't say it was wonderful. I said it was imminent, Adam. Oh, it's imminent. It was
imminent. Okay. Are you going to kill Tom G. Fisher?
It's none of your business.
All right. John.
I wonder if he's being sincere here or if he like doesn't have rights to the name.
Well, no, that's part of this discussion. So, all right, hold on. But let's get into the respectability of reforming your band but not reforming your band in a minute. Outside of that, John, give the people, in particular Adam White, a bit of a refresher here on who the fuck we're talking about, because I don't know.
Well, first, Adam, you need to read this description in his Swiss and self-important tone. Hellhammer will never return and will never be before. So anyway, the point being, Hellhammer, Celtic Frost, and Trypticon, to me, it's all the same band, more or less. Tom Gabriel Fisher is the main guy. He is an architect and perhaps the creator of what is now known as death metal. Not death metal, black metal. I just lost some metal points there.
John, you're going to be at death threats in the mail.
Hellhammer is kind of similar to Slayer, except for they're a little grimier, a little harder, and perhaps a little more punk. Celtic Frost is an iconic thrash band that actually became an avant-garde band, and then they morphed into Trypticon, which I just saw on Sunday, and it was amazing. I would call Trypticon avant-garde, but it's basically thrash meets doom meets black metal, and it's super hard and super heavy. The other main Celtic Frost guy would be Martin Ein, who passed away a little while ago. And he was in Celtic Frost, briefly in Trypticon, briefly in Hellhammer. So he's the other main guy. But this band it's difficult to overstate the importance of extreme metal in regards to any of these three bands.
Yes.
There's your primer.
Well, there you go. So, John. Here's what I want to talk about, just because. Like I kind of like the sentiment there where like we see bands reform all the time, especially bands from say like that were playing in the late 70s, early 80s, where they get back together with like a few of the principal members, maybe just one, but then, you know, some ringers, and go by the same band name because it's marketable really to do so. And I mean, it's almost understandable why it's marketable to do so. Like, I don't want to keep harping on Black Flag, but they're, of course, the one that's in my head. So, you know, if you're going to go out and you're Greg Ginn and you're going to play a bunch of Black Flag songs on stage, it is definitely going to help you convey what that show is about to just say it's Black Flag rather than say it's like, you know, like, Greg Ginn plays the songs of Black Flag or something like that, right? Like, it's way more succinct just to use the band name. I get that. Absolutely. You're going to sell more tickets there. But you know, put the marketing aside. If you're a band that's like enough of like a cult band that people are going to know what you're up to regardless, and you're not worried about like roping in rubes who just want to see that original band again and they can't. I really respect the idea that, you know, we're going to go play these songs, but we're not going to call ourselves that. We're not going to say that is the reformation. Like, in a way, it's kind of like Flag.
I agree. I think this is the way to do it. As Adam said, he's basically saying, we're not Hellhammer, but I'm a guy that was in Hellhammer. And I'm when bands bring out old songs or old from previous projects, people go, oh, you just do it for the cash grab. I don't think any musician or almost any musician has ever written a song with the purpose of it not being heard by people. So as much of an original guy doing the songs he wrote we can get live, I'm all for. And I think this is the tasteful way to do it. Just like Flag is kind of like off. And I think this is awesome. And I think it's well done. And I love how it, with Tom Warrior, everything is like so serious and so dire and so stacked with meaning. You know, I just, he's a weirdo and he's an awesome musician. And this is cool. And this is the way to do it. And I might fly out for Vegas for it.
How big was the place that Triptychon played in, Jeff?
Triptychon played the Decibel Beer Metal Fest. That's about 2,000.
It was a big crowd.
Right. But I mean, Triptychon draws about, I don't know, 1,000 people, maybe, you know, maybe roughly Danzig size, maybe a little bit smaller, but you know,
there's a few bands kicking around like this in the metal world that are kind of, you always wonder if it's, you know, they just respectfully aren't using the name, or for legal purposes aren't using the name. There's a band right now touring quite a bit called The Skull, and it's like a bunch of guys from the early guys from Trouble. You know Trouble, John?
Kind
of.
I know Trouble.
But anyway, The Skull is a bunch of the early guys from that band. But I think it's because they can't have the name. But I'm not positive on that. But they're pretty cool. We're checking out.
I mean,
for a guy who doesn't like the weed, John, you should do like your stoner metal.
I do love stoner metal. I love Sleep.
And you're going to all these beer fests, and I don't think you're a beer person. I don't understand, John, how you operate in the world. Like, what do you do without?
It's one of those things. If you get good bands, beers. If you get good bands, you go wherever. You know, I'm. You know, there's venues in town and venues everywhere that I don't particularly like. But if they book good enough bands, I will go to their stupid venue and pay $11 for a beer. So it is what it is.
Oh, here's a crazy story. So I was at Decibel Beer Metal Fest, and a record label. Tell me, is this good form or not? You guys. So I was at this one label was selling tons of test presses for $25 each. Like, test press playing for known bands, right? And so it was the end of the festival. It was there for two whole days and nobody had bought any test presses. And I'm like, well, everyone's had a chance to buy them. I'm going to buy them and flip them. Is that bullshit or is that fair?
So say it again, John. You cut out a minute. There was test. Who was selling them?
A label was selling tons of test presses of known bands, like known bands. And no one was buying.
They're probably not legit. That's probably why everybody else probably could. They saw you coming from a mile away, John.
Well, it's from the label itself, Tom. You know what I mean? I mean,
wow. I get it. So what did you end up buying? Anything cool? Anything you can tell us about?
Some metal stuff that most people here want. I don't even want to say necessarily because I'm not sure if it's cool to do that. However, one of the ones I got, the guy was like, oh, that wasn't supposed to be in there. That record's not out yet. And I'm like, I promise I won't upload it. Which I wanted.
You got a test press for an album that's not out yet. Nice.
That would be bullshit if I bought it up, which I wouldn't do. You know what I mean? But is that fair game? Like at record store day, being a flipper is lame, right? I mean, because people are in line, they're trying to get the record, and you're just buying it to resell. That's lame. But if I'm at the metal
bucks, dude, I mean,
no, 25, 25.
Oh, 25. I thought you said $5. I'm like, man, buy them all, 25. Yeah, so you can probably double your money on those.
Oh, I can do more than that, Tom. I did the research. I did the creep away from the table, do the research.
Go to the bathroom and pull your phone out.
Right. I mean, is that bullshit or is that fair game? Everybody had a chance to buy them, and nobody was buying them. And I was there, and I had to
It was fine. It didn't make the guys in the bathroom uncomfortable at all that you had your phone out. It was good.
If it was a long line and people were trying to get them, I would say it's definitely bullshit to buy them and flip them. But they were just sitting there, and no one cared.
That's the price of a regular that they're probably selling their regular presses for. You know,
I hear you.
I'm not a test press guy. I don't think I have any. I don't really. It's not something I really care about. But I don't know. I know there are people who will pay big money for them.
Oh, there are, Tom. There are.
Well, good. Make some money, John. Make some money.
Pay yeah, some John. Tax. You're in the okay there. I think you're in the.
But okay. he's not claiming this income. He's got to pay his illicit gains to pay his taxes.
But if there was a line, then that would be bullshit, right?
Why? I mean, there's still no. Even if there was a line, no. It's. I mean, it's fair game. I think it's fair game.
I think that's kind of bullshit because, like, I'm a big fan of the golden rule. Melvin sell a lot of rare records at their show, and if you want the super rare ones, you got to get there as soon as the door opens, right? And they have like five of this one. Five. If some guy in front of you bought all five just to reflip them, like, isn't that the same as a scalper on Ticketmaster that I hate? Like, isn't that the same thing?
Yeah.
But see, my
these people have all had their chance, you know.
That's my rationale is with this scenario, unlike Record Store Day where there is a line here, everyone had their chance. Everyone could have done the research that I could have done, and no one made the decision to do it. And no one was buying them, and I was there to buy them. Everyone had their chance, and so it was my fair chance, I feel.
What are we talking about quantity-wise?
Well, I could have bought 50 of them. I bought about 6 of them.
Just the ones you thought would be easiest to flip.
Precisely.
No, I think that's all right in that situation. I see no foul. It's not like when you went to that record fair and you were like trying to talk the old man down a dollar on a CD, just trying to make a living. You know,
I still feel bad about that. I ruined that guy's day. Oh my god.
Oh, the shame. All right. I guess I'll play a song here. So it is super rare that I ever have a band to talk about from the town that I live in. There are bands from Niagara Falls, of course, but there are bands from everywhere, of course, but we're not really a town that has a thriving anything scene. Our downtown hollowed out in the 70s when someone built a mall. So, that completely died and evaporated. And we've been pretty much, with the exception of the tourist area around where the actual falls is, we're a shitty, dilapidated Rust Belt town that, you know, factories keep leaving. And any of the city's money goes to the tourist area where the tourists go. So we're not a place where bands have regular venues they can go play or anything like that. If anyone wants to go do anything, it's in one of the neighboring towns. So, you know, band from Niagara Falls is rare for me to mention, but I got one and it's fucking cool. So, this is, and weirdly enough, the one band I come across from Niagara Falls that I really want to talk about is like a fucking youth crew hardcore band. The band is called Wildside. They have an LP coming out called Who the Hell is Wildside? It's coming out on Boston's Triple B Records on May 7th. It's 10 tracks. It includes the one I'm going to play right now, which is called Street Action. It's like this mid-tempo rager of a track that, you know, where's the influence of like Warzone and Murphy's Law and all these, you know, all these like genre staples. So here you go. Here is an NFHC band for you kids. This is Warzone from my hometown in Niagara Falls playing Street Action. Did I say it was Warzone? I think I did. This is Wildside. Jesus, the W is just infectious. This is Wildside from Niagara Falls, Ontario, NFHC.
There was when I was a kid in the late 80s, early 90s, there was a hair metal band called Wildside.
I bet you there are a ton of bands called Wildside.
Wildside! In this thing so crazy, life it's easy to just lose your mind. Fresh of cash, feels no greed at what you want, not what you need. Take it, never give. Want to know, that's how they live. It's not changing, cheated and mistreated, but happy all the same. You
Okay, we're back. That was Wild Side. I wasn't sure where I was actually cutting that to do the song, so I'm going to do it right there after John yelled that. Anyways, okay, so we have a few other things to talk about this week before we get rolling. The first of them is, in my head, like a total game changer thing, but maybe not. I don't know. So Bandcamp, the website that allows bands to upload and sell the MP3s of their songs in a way that I guess we have all sort of agreed is the least scummy and predatory of all of the various digital music services.
It's very artist friendly from what I get from my musician friends.
Yes, that's very artist friendly. Although I did learn something this week that I didn't know because I asked, which is that this is a detour from what the actual story is. But like I was wondering, so you've seen a lot of bands that are signing up through digital music distributors at this point, which is to say they're getting a third party to go and to put their music on all the various services that are out there. They're sharing these links to like, oh, here, go listen to our new single. And you go to some intermediary page where it's like, oh, here's our new single. And there's a link to it on like Spotify and Apple Music and YouTube or whatever, right? And you can click to go through to whatever service is your preference. Like rarely, like 9 times out of 10, Bandcamp is not on the list. And I couldn't figure out why that is, because it is available for that. And I guess it's because if you're just bringing in some casual one-time listener to go check out a song, well, going and racking up that Spotify hit is something that you can actually use to your advantage. But Bandcamp is just streaming the songs to you a handful of times before they're trying to encourage you to actually buy it. So Bandcamp
sometimes after once through, it'll hit you up.
Right. But they're not actually paying out like a streaming royalty in the same way that,
SoundCloud. I wonder if the band doesn't have I don't know how it works.
I know how it works because I have a Bandcamp account where you can buy the Flame CD. You need to stream things on Bandcamp, but you don't get money from the streams either.
Yeah. So I guess that's why they're pointing people to Spotify in this.
But you don't have to pay out.
Bandcamp has launched this service. Whereby if you are a band and you have music on Bandcamp and you want that music to be on a vinyl record, Bandcamp allows you to set up almost like an internal to Bandcamp Kickstarter page for it, by which you can raise funds to have the record pressed. And then once, enough people have said they'll contribute, that you hit whatever the minimum is, the record will be pressed by Bandcamp, like through a arrangement that they have with a pressing plant, and then shipped by Bandcamp to the people that have bought it from you. So I want to go read the, where is it here? Read their little description of why this is cool. So here you go. They said, today we're offering a glimpse of an initiative from Bandcamp that aims to address these challenges. When he says these challenges, they mean the fact that pressing vinyl is risky and expensive. They say, our new vinyl pressing service streamlines the financing, production, and fulfillment of vinyl records. With no upfront investment, an artist or label can create a vinyl campaign and start taking orders almost immediately. Once they reach their minimum goal, we'll press the records and ship them to their fans. This new service eliminates risk since fans' orders finance the pressing rather than the artist or label. It eliminates hassle since we press the records, print the packaging, and ship it to fans and fulfill the digital. And it offers complete control with the design and pricing up to the artist and Bandcamp taking no ownership of the record. And it produces a quality result. Our manufacturing partner has over 60 years experience pressing vinyl, so the records look and sound great. So that is just like in short what this is. And they have like a, they haven't opened this up to everyone yet, but they have a few sort of premier artists that they've gone and they've launched the first sort of handful of crowdfunding with. So I'm looking at this and like I've yet to even like entirely process this, but you could come at this from a whole bunch of angles where it, on the one hand, you could look at it from saying this in a way, like if this works, this really eliminates a lot of what a record label does. We're now you as the band, you know, you have to make sure that you're doing your promotions. You have to make sure you're booking your tours. But as far as the whole, you know, the record label acting as a bank to finance your release, well, that cuts that right out, because if you can, you know, if you can build up the fan base and get fucking Bandcamp to press it for you, well, there you go. So it's so there's that aspect of it. There's the aspect of it where, like, I could see a lot of the maybe not the small little boutique labels of the kind that I think we prefer, but like if you're a mid-range label, this has got to feel like something of a threat. Where if you're some middle of the road label and you have bands that you kind of rely on being part of your family, but they're on Bandcamp as well, and they could just as easily make and sell their records through there and cutting you out as the middleman, like that could shake that scene up. But then there's also the angle of this where you look at it and you go, like, I imagine that we're cool with this, but like we're cool with this kind of because like Bandcamp has the cred at this point. Like we, as Tom was saying, like they seem to be the most artist friendly one. No one ever seems to be complaining about Bandcamp in the way that they sort of like begrudgingly have to live with Spotify or something like that. But if like, I feel like if Spotify offered this service, it would be seen as way more predatory, like them leveraging their weight to try to like muscle in on whatever remaining aspects of the physical music industry exist. But Bandcamp doing it, we're like, that's Bandcamp's cool. This seems like a good thing for artists. So how do we look at this?
You don't want to see Wildside put out their new album on the Beats by Dre label.
That might do them good. But how do we approach this? Is this cool? I mean, like, it seems cool. I'm reading it as cool, but am I naive? And I'm just like, I'm
cool. It remains to be seen what's going to happen. Cool. Anytime you're able to put the means of production in the hands of the people, oh my gosh, I said something communist. But I think in this situation, it's good. You know, you're talking about the mid label. It would hurt maybe some of the smaller labels, but the truth is, the people who run these smaller labels are pretty much doing it as a labor of love. I don't think you have to have a pretty decent sized label to be, have a couple of people making it a living off it at this point. So I don't know that it'll really change things that much.
No, I mean, I don't think it would change, you know, if you're running some bedroom tape label, or you make you do like 1,007 inches every few months or something like that. Like, I don't know if that's going to make a difference for them. But what I wonder is that what if you are what I'm waiting to see is, what if you are a middle range artist that can definitely sell stuff, but they're going to actually do the math on the back of a napkin and go, you know what? Like I don't know who I'm going to
be. Does it make sense?
Well, like, let's say you're Teenage Bottle Rocket.
To do it ourselves, yeah.
And you're Teenage Bottle Rocket and you go, like, we have fans. We have a fan base.
Yeah.
We'll be able to sell our records. you know, we're happy being on. Are they on Fat still?
We're going to sell X amount of records. We're going to sell X amount of records, whether we're on Fat or on Red Scare or we do it ourselves.
Right. But they're going to look at this and go, fuck it. Let's just roll the dice and just do the record through Bandcamp. And as long as Bandcamp has the capacity to actually, like, you know, ship and sell for one of those like quasi bigger bands, I wonder if that is going to turn around and hurt the Fats and them of the world. But then like the super disruptive part of my brain would look at it and go like, well, is that okay then? Like, have they like found a better model? I'm like, fuck it. That's.
Well, there's gotta be a number where it makes sense or doesn't make sense. Is it a band that sells 20,000 copies of the album makes sense? Or is it a band that sells 5,000? Because the fact of the matter is the record sales, vinyl record sales are increasing exponentially every year, 100%, 100%, 100%, 200%. But the truth is, it's still a tiny, tiny fraction of physical sales from 20 years ago.
Counter-Strike. Many, many, many of bands have gone from an independent label and said, well, you know, I've reached my level of popularity. I'm just going to put out records myself because it pays to. It doesn't really pay for me to be on a label. How many of them have really gone total self-release after being on an independent label and then having newfound massive success or greater success than they would have seen on the medium label, I guess, if you will? Not that many, although maybe it works out in the long run, you know?
Well, there's more to put on a record than making copies of the record and sell. You know, you have to do things to sell the record. I think a lot of bands might be underestimating that aspect of the business.
But I'm astounded at how bad most bands are at, like, promotion and, like communicating. You would think most people know how to write an email or a letter. I'm astounded at how some amazing bands, like I'll get an email and they want to premiere a video at Punk News, but they don't know how to ask for it. And they don't like, oh, you need a picture of us or, oh, you need an embed code. Yeah. They're like, well, how do I get an embed code? I'm like, figure it out. You know, it's amazing at how bad.
Well, it is. By the same token, you meet these little labels or whatever. They've been doing it for like 15 years and they don't even have a freaking email list. You know what I mean? The same thing. It's just like, you know, we see the other side of it. So we kind of know what it looks like to have when people have their shit together. But yeah, it is pretty amazing how amateurish some of this stuff is.
Well, what I really wonder is that, like, so many of those people that used to be in-house employees at the labels have all been pushed out to be independent contractors now anyways. Yeah. So a lot of the function that the label did for you, like, you could do the Bandcamp thing and get someone in, right? Like, your booking agent probably doesn't work for the record label anymore. They're an independent, right? Your publicist might be affiliated with the label heavily, but they may not even work there anymore. And you look at a lot of, like,
only the very biggest labels seem to have their own publicists anymore.
Well, right. So you look at it like even the ones that, like, the big pump publicists that used to work for the labels, like, don't really anymore. Like Jamie Colotta, of course, was out at Side One because Side One sort of imploded, but, like, she's doing everything on her own now. But even look at someone Mel Kay up here in Toronto, where, like, Melanie Kay, I think, was like de facto Fat Records Canada for a long time. But I don't think she was ever really Fat Records Canada. She was just like the independent one that Fat happened to use for everything. And you don't have to be a Fat band to use Mel's services. So what's to stop you from putting out your record through the Bandcamp thing and then hiring a good publicist and hiring a good booking agent? It's possible. So it's interesting. It's an interesting shakeup of things.
It remains to be seen what what's actually going to happen. I'm a late adapter, so we'll see if I'll believe it when I see it.
It's almost like no one knows what's going to happen with the music industry.
Yeah. Weirdly enough. So speaking of I don't know how to seg into this. There's a DOA comp coming out that people should probably know about because it is classic era DOA. So they're putting out a compilation record from Sudden Death, which is Joey Shithead's label, on May 3rd. It is called 1978, and it is an appropriate name because it is a collection of things from 1978. It's going to collect 21 songs. Some of them are early singles, the classics, but a bunch of them are previously unreleased demos. This is a bunch of rare tracks. I actually want to read their description just verbatim because it'll be interesting if you're interested in punk music from that era. So the two constants on this album are Joey and Chuck Biscuits, and they play on every track on this thing. Let me jump ahead. Okay. There's like,
so was that pre Randy Rampage then?
It would have been because Chuck was there. Chuck was there right at the start. Was he not?
Yeah, I think so.
Like briefly, right? But anyways,
78 was when they started, right?
Yeah. So here we go. So there is a Never Seen the Light of Day demo version of The Enemy on there, which has different lyrics that speak to fighting Nazis, which is very relevant to these days. There's a bunch of never before heard tracks on there with the titles. What do we got? Bored and Suicidal, The Mutant, No God, No War, Rip Disjoint, No Way Out, Rent a Riot. And then there's actually like classic early singles. So Fucked Up Ronnie, Disco Sucks, World War III, The Prisoner, 13 are on there. There's also demo versions of America the Beautiful and Liar for Hire, both of which have Biscuits drumming and are different. They say wildly different than the versions that you would hear on the album War on 45. So this is, if you're a fan of DOA, but in particular, like, you know, of that, you know, like late 70s West Coast-ish hardcore scene, this is something you might want to check out. It's out on May 3rd. It's called 1978. So there you go. I don't know what to say about this.
I'd be curious to hear it.
Looks cool, I
like
man.
DOA a lot. I'm not Canadian, but I like DOA.
You don't have to be Canadian to like DOA. You have to be Canadian to like Thrush Hermit, but you don't have to be Canadian to like DOA. John, talk about Morrissey.
Canadian to have maybe heard of Thrush Hermit, but
Morrissey, man. Morrissey's being Morrissey once again. It seems as though generally like people have had their fill and he's worn out his welcome. I'm still a fan. He just canceled two Canadian dates. Although he did have some serious health issues a little while ago, so I think this is a part of that. But anyways, the point being is he's putting out a covers album next month. Track listing seems to be a little bit underwhelming. However, one of the tracks, and he released the single, is a cover of the Fifth Dimension's Wedding Bell Blues. And the song is a duet with Billy Joe Armstrong. And of course, Wedding Bell Blues has the famous refrain, "I love you, Bill. I always will." And what I love about Morrissey is you can – is he insane? Is he like – is this a joke or is this serious in that like – it's funny for Morrissey and Billy Joe Armstrong to be singing a love song to each other. That's funny, right? But also it's kind of important. Morrissey, gay guy, Billy Joe Armstrong, bisexual. It's rare that we have two men singing love songs to each other in the mainstream, and that's what we have here. But it's also kind of like ersatz, if you will, or kind of cheesy. So is he like hamming it up here, or is this a serious take on this AM song from the late 60s? I think it's amusing. I don't know if people are getting the joke, or is Morrissey like – or is he – Is he at like a dancing phase? Tom, you'll appreciate this. Last Danzig album, great album, terrible production. There's no way that like that Danzig album, like no Danzig clearly said this is how it should sound, and no one was like, oh man, you should fix it. You know what I mean? So like he's kind of out of touch with what a good produced record should sound like. Here is Morrissey being funny and tongue in cheek. Is he making some sort of political statement, or is he off his rocker and he thinks this is genuinely like a not funny song and serious? You know what I mean?
I think Morrissey is probably smarter than most of his critics. I suspect he's just jerking people's chain, having fun. That'd be my guess.
It's funny though, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's not great, but it's funny.
I'm just, it's not the funniest thing you've ever heard. It's not Police Academy, Tom. You know what I mean?
But it's not George Carlin, no.
But I just think people miss the self-awareness that Morrissey – see, I think people want Morrissey to only do, quote, love songs.
See, I think he's self-aware. The problem is, John, I think he's self-aware about some things and utterly oblivious about others when it comes to himself, you know?
Right.
I mean, we all are to a certain extent, I guess. Morrissey's only human.
That's true.
Maybe more human than the rest of us in some ways.
Adam, what do you think of it? You think it was funny or stupid?
It doesn't read as stupid. Like it reads as a genuine attempt at going and remaking this song. So I'm gonna,
the way Morrissey sings though, is there any way he cannot sound genuine? You know, that big croon. I don't know.
I mean, it's a song that fits Morrissey, I think, more than anything else, right? Like, Billy Joe's, if you didn't tell me that Billy Joe was involved in this, I wouldn't have picked it out. So that's sort of like neither here nor there for me. But like, I can listen to this and go like that is a song that totally works with Moz being his, you know, at his most sort of like theatrical and ridiculous. Like, it totally fits that style. So yeah,
I'm not a Morrissey hater. I'm not a Morrissey. I have a couple of Morrissey albums. Your Arsenal and Kill Uncle, I think. Maybe a third one. I can't remember. I'm not a Morrissey hater, but I'm not a huge Morrissey fan either. But I was surprised. I went on vacation recently, and I listened to a lot of Sirius because I didn't bring enough CDs because I was stupid. So I listened to a lot of Sirius Radio, and after a while, I get burned out on Hear Nation, and I turn over to First Wave. And I heard a couple of Morrissey songs, and I sort of enjoyed it. It was, what did I hear? Suede Head.
Oh, well, that's the classic.
Yeah, they played classic. It was definitely early, like, just early solo career stuff. First Wave is like I guess like a new wave station. It gets pretty deep though, you know. They play definitely stuff that I don't remember from the early 80s, but anyway, Morrissey's all right.
We listen to a lot of internet radio when we're just sort of like hanging around the house of some station that plays that type of stuff. And classic era Morrissey tracks are like a consistent joy whenever they come up, because we try to sing along with them. See, I always want to sing along to like the last of the International Playboys, but I can't. Like, my voice doesn't do that, but I try.
What's the 10 ton truck kills the both of us. What's that
the
one,
boy,
John?
The boy with pleasure the door to the side, off the queen is dead. Yeah. Bam, jam, wham.
The pleasure is all mine. Yeah.
Not too bad. Morrissey, you're ridiculous and problematic. Anyways, one last thing before we get out of here. Let's make this the last song, or the last thing that we do. So if you want to send us any email, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. But before we wrap, let's talk about Latte Plus. Is that how we pronounce
Latte
this?
Latte Plus?
Latte Plus?
The name is inspired by the milk bar in A Clockwork Orange. Do you know the movie, Adam? Do they have that in Canada? Is it banned? Is it allowed?
It's allowed. I actually, that's one of those things I've never in my life seen. I'm aware of.
Seriously?
I've never seen A Clockwork Orange. Yeah.
You've seen it, John, right?
I saw it when I was like 16, bro.
Wow, it's such a classic. Stanley Kubrick. But anyway, these are some Italian guys. You know, it's funny. The world is so small now that, you know, crazy Italian guys can find you on the internet and you can sort of befriend them in a sort of language barrier kind of way. So anyway, these are my pals Latte Plus, and they gotta know I'm coming out. And it's you know, as critics and as reviewers and as punk guys, we always love to reward people for like taking artistic chances and like pushing boundaries. But the truth is, there's really nothing wrong with doing one thing and doing it really well. And these guys do like Ramones Worship about as well as anybody. So we're going to play the title track from the new Latte album. It's called Next to Ruin.
No one.